You played those cards right, and you do come across quite intelligent now, Lewis.
I mate, I just got that public school upbringing. You know, I just
you do
got
come
the,
across a piece of.
I could get away
I'm
with
not
it.
The one that put potato to keep it fresh in a freezer, am I?
Welcome back to another episode of After the Whistle with me, Lewis Moody. Leon is still on holiday over in Japan. And what a weekend of rugby we had. England absolutely decimated the All Blacks and are now preparing for their fourth World Cup final, having only won one out of the last three that they've been in. And I'm delighted to have with me today Mark Ronnie Regan, MBE, who is also a part of that 2003 World Cup side with me. Good to see you, mate. Yeah, and 07, you just mouthed to me.
Yeah.
Mate, I'd love to. I'm going to delve into your career a bit more because I've just found out a fact which I never knew from the many years we played together. But you're actually profoundly deaf and you've just put hearing aids in. And I think many of our teammates and people that would have played with you had no idea that you're actually profoundly deaf for the majority of your career.
No, they didn't at all. I just thought it was. That's the way hearing was. I couldn't hear you. I just basically spent most of my time lip reading.
Mate, imagine that. You did the line out calls in the 07. Who is calling them? Benny Kay? Or you're looking at his lips. Benny's thinking, why is he having to come
over?
Why has
it overthrown me? Where has it gone to the back for? That's what I'm thinking. Well, I didn't hear the call.
So many explanations.
Yours.
Mate. So many explanations. Well, look,
it does explain a lot.
We'll delve into that more. You know, your life now, you know, challenges during setbacks. Arguments with coaches. Obviously, as you just said to me, you know, the hearing aids explains a lot. You know, it's probably why you're so loud, so outspoken, but a real character of the game. We'll delve into that. But we can't delve into that until we've spoken about the weekend's matches. And we were sort of reminiscing before we speak about New Zealand, but about 03 and where you were on that evening after the World Cup final. What are your memories of 03, the day and day after?
Oh, obviously, it's tremendous, and the team was magnificent. All 31 players could have easily played, could have slotted into any side in that World Cup, as Clive Wood would allude to it many times. It reminds me a lot about the group of players that are here now playing in the World Cup this weekend.
Do you think it's quite similar? Do you think the team's quite
similar?
Yeah,
I look at that team now and I think, I look back over the weekend, would many of the 03 side get in that side today?
Yeah.
And it's a matter of a time scale. But look at the skill set of the level we had in 2003 to skill sets they have now. Obviously, massively different. And the fitness level, et cetera. But I do still think that there'll only be one or two people that would get into this current England side.
Do you really?
I think is that good at the moment.
Wow.
I think they're very, very good. Drilled. We celebrated wins. This team don't celebrate.
Yeah.
They wait to the end. Nothing's won yet until... Yeah. You know, you've won that cup and you get it back to the changing room and then you can relax and then you can get stuck into some drinks and do what you want. But it was win or lose at the booze, wasn't it? You know, and we'd have a great time on and off the field. And like you say, that, you know, when we did win, I remember that being involved in a 48-hour drinking session with the likes of the Fun Bus, a.k.a. Not you, Lewis Moody, but it was Jason Leonard, and got under his wing and then went for many, many a drink for him. Still wearing our World Cup winners' medals around Australia.
Yeah, really.
And then we were very fortunate to have flagged down a police van and chucked us all in the back of the snatch wagon and got us back to Manly Hotel, safe and sound, quick change, and then to the RFU dinner, I think it was, or Webb Ellis World Rugby dinner on the Sunday, which we were all pretty well hanging by then, Lewis.
I remember that, and I remember absolutely despising having to go to that because we'd had the game, we were all knackered, and then... As you said, you know, it was a reasonably late night after the final, and everyone came back in different arrays of distress. But we're leading, so the boys are leading into this final this week. Was it going to be at the weekend in 5 days, 6 days' time from now? Were you surprised at the dominance that this England side had over New Zealand? Did that performance, you know, this side put in, surprise you? Because I was like, I knew...
No, I don't think so. I give them credit. I look at it and think, right, okay, we've seen fits and starts. We've seen a little bit here and there of how England can play. Just remember the game against Ireland.
Yeah.
And the Six Nations. Magnificent
True,
straight out the middle. That's the way it started, and that's when it ended. And he put an 80-minute performance together, and I thought it was absolutely magnificent. And he had to put their A game together for that, for against New Zealand, against number one team in the world. And no, stats don't lie. And I massively disagree with Gatland saying that. I think England's played their best game so far. They've got nothing left in the tank. I'm thinking, you know, that's red rag to a bull. That is. That's like, we're prove you wrong, you know. And that was against South Africa as well, the old foe, and that brings back. There's gonna be a lot of chat this week about Mark Kwaito's try, isn't there?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
There's going to be loads of chat and about the way the game we played in and the game we lost 36-0 and then we come out for the World Cup final and come within a score of this very dominant South African side back in the day with John Smith.
Well, that's a good point, actually, isn't it? Because everyone's already talking up England like they've won it already, you know. And Gats is, you know, maybe giving Eddie and the England boys a bit of added ammunition to go out and do the job. But how different is South Africa going to be in this final? You know, we both played in that game in 07 in that final, lost 36-0. They're narrow, you know, could have won it.
Yeah, in the final, but it's pressure. Yeah. Pressure gets to you, and I think we had Johnny back fit as well, so that's at least 10 points, wasn't it, to us? That's what pressure does to people, and people, like, for instance, you watched that game yesterday. It's a very, very boring game, full of kicking and chasing. It was awful. Not a great game to watch at all. Not a great spectacle, but that's what pressure does to you. And that's the pressure. You don't want to play in that 3-4 playoff. You know, just scrape through a win, to play in the final. So you can either get a gold or a silver. You don't want to be playing that 3-4 playoff, especially against New Zealand side, who would just go right. And you're Welsh as well. Yeah. And I'm actually thinking, I'd rather be injured for this one now.
A bit like a George Boyd flipping
off with a hamstring, I'd be like, well, I've picked that up during the week.
In terms of the game now, we see the final's coming up at the weekend. South Africa are preparing for what's going to be an English onslaught. And, you know, England are preparing for what's going to be a brutal physical encounter. How do you see that? You know, the professional game's come a long way, hasn't it? You know, how do you see those two sides preparing? Can you cast your mind back to 03, obviously, you know, maybe the preparation we had there, but do you think those guys will be preparing in a similar way as we did, or do you think it's all moved on? It'll be far more scientific.
You know as well as I do, Lewis, there'll be psychologists in there, there'll be nutritionists in there, there'll be everything. They will not leave a stone unturned, as Clive Woodward did, and we know that how good a manager he was.
Yeah.
He looked at all angles and it was just fabulous the way we were so professional back then, like the shirts, we were thinking about the shirts, etc., what to wear, the kit to wear, all looking the same, all on time, no one, you know, Lombardi time.
Yeah.
Attention to detail was drilled into you so much in 2003. I don't see much of it changed now. I just think that the kids now are now learning it a lot earlier. It came new to us.
Yeah, very much.
And now it's drilled into them as from school kids, and if they like, they got academies nowadays, haven't they?
Yeah.
England academies, they got England schools, they got these young kids coming through from school. And we look at the game, hugely professional, constantly see a lot more of it on TV, which is great, more of it on the back of the paper, not loads of it on the front, which is fabulous. We want to see great news, and we want to see the Maritojis. We want to see these people that are doing fabulously well as well for the kids, etc. And he's a real massive role model. You look at this bloke.
Yeah.
Right. And there's numerous of people like that in the team. And I look for it, and I think, and I got a lot of admiration for the players that are playing nowadays, because it is hard. You think about the 3 months they went through, or 4 months they've been going through, and for this game alone, this weekend. Remember when we were doing it on last week of World Cup? We were eating jelly babies, we were having a chill. That's what they'd be doing this week. They've done
so
all the hard
trying
work.
To relax, just to
they've
relax.
They've got relaxed. We've done all the training, haven't they? Max, imagine them out training. Remember when we were training as well, Lewis? Yeah. We were drilled and beat each other up massively. Yeah. The amount of running, it was just like, everyone wanted their piece of meat, didn't they? Every single coach wanted their piece of meat. And that'd be the same with this team, but it'd be more controlled. And now I can imagine being more controlled. Now we look at a game this weekend. You know exactly what we're going to get from South Africa. They're big, physical, hard blokes.
Do you think they're still as big? I mean, because I just remember coming up against like Backies Botha, Victor Matfield, you know, Osdran. I mean, they were monsters.
Well,
have you
seen Estebeth?
True, yeah.
Have you seen that monster they got, that other monster they got, LaRue, in the second row, wherever it is, the beard. And then Peter Tef Dutoy, who's like 6'5", 6'7", actually, in the back row. And he looks blonde there, like you, but he's 2 foot taller than you, Lewis.
That's true, man.
He's as good.
he's probably much better, mate.
And from Newland, we know we're going to get off him. He's not going to sidestep anyone, is he? He's just going to try and run over people. And as we were told, whenever you play South Africa, they're going to go route one. They are not going to go round you like New Zealand will try to play you off the feet, off the offload. They'll try to run round you. The game of rugby is not supposed to be a physical game. There's not supposed to be any tackling in it. It's supposed to be keep the ball off the floor and move it around.
Evasion,
a bit,
isn't it?
So, evasion of the contact. Of course it is. You don't. The longer the ball's on the floor, the slower the game is.
It's not as much fun though, is it? I love
no, it's not. Because I used to run into a rock, Lewis, and go, right, who hasn't, who has not got the same colour socks on as I have? Well, him over there, he got a standard on. You know?
Yeah. Well, at a time when you're allowed to ruck, right? You could just part you of the use ruck, your studs
like
to get him out of the way.
Swinging arm. But you know what we're going to get off South Africa? They're going to go route one. They're going to try and run over. As long as you can defend.
Yeah.
Over phase after phase and not crack and, what was it, trust in your defence and not give any penalties away. Because that's what we're looking for, penalties. Kick to the corner, got a great catch drive and they got a great scrum.
And Willie LaRue can kick some points,
yeah,
can't he, as
and
well?
He can indeed. And you know what you're going to get off South Africa. It's going to be a great game. And like I said, there's going to be a lot of talk about it this week, about 2007.
Yeah.
Of course there is.
And it'll be nice, you know. So obviously we're going to cover some of the past and your involvements, but before we go back to 2007, and let's just look really quickly at this final. So you said South Africa are going to be brutal. I think there's no doubts about that. Can you see England winning it? I mean, I think everyone has said that it is giving them the trophy now because they played so well against the All Blacks. From your sort of experiences, you know, what's the reality going to be in that final? And if England can win, where's it going to happen? And what's the score going to be? There's three questions there. I've forgotten the first one myself.
I might have as well. So, you know, it makes two of us. So there's an IQ of 100 in it.
I know, yeah. It's not good. It's not good, is it?
And I think 90 of them are mine.
Piss off.
We're allowed to swear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Sure, podcast.
Yeah, within reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, so go on, this final, mate, who's going to win it? It's not going to be as easy for England for all the reasons you've just said, but where are they going to win it and why?
I just think we're a little bit, the skill set bit better, and I think we're more clever.
Yeah,
I think we'll have a game plan of how to play this side, try to keep it away from rocks and walls. Let's not have too many lineouts against them. Let's not play them at their own game. We got the skill set, we got the kicking style, we got the offloading. We can be group one. That's not working. Let's try something else. Let's try the kicking game. Ford's playing outstandingly well. He's, you know, silenced his critics on the weekend, which is fabulous for him.
Were you surprised he was dropped for the Aussie game?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Most definitely. I thought, my God, we played him all the way through the tournament and then you drop him for this game and you're worried about some 19-year-old running down his channel. I think it's a bit wrong, but it was just a way of maybe, it's a gamble, a bit like the Hansen made a gamble with Barrett, wasn't it?
Dropped Kane and bought in Barrett. That clearly didn't work, did it?
It didn't quite work out for him, did it? And then you think yourself, sometimes you win these little gambles and these little hunches, which I've heard that a few times upward. I'm picking you on a hunch or picking you not on a hunch. And I just think it'd be a tough game, but England should win this game. I'm just a bit gutted that I'm going to be over there. And two, I'm not going to be home here.
You're gutted that you're going to be over there?
Well, I'm going over. I'm really looking forward to doing that. And I may have said that the wrong way there. disappointed I won't be here to celebrate it with my friends and family.
Oh, no, I get that.
That's what I'm saying. Down the pub and it being a massive all-dayer.
Yeah.
And it had lasted till next month. It lasts till Monday, you know. And I'll be on a plane on coming home, you know. Yeah. That's what I'll miss. Because I missed it in 2007 or 2003 because we were part of that.
Yeah.
Set up. I mean, we never knew what was going on at home. You know, people having parties in the streets, and I'm thinking, you know, we missed that.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. I always said that I would like to have split myself in 2003 to have been able to watch it, because I always think you're more emotionally involved in a game when you watch it than you are when you play, because when you play, you're just doing your job, aren't you? You know,
yeah.
So, but you're dead right. So, give me a score prediction for the final at the weekend.
I think it'd be close. I wouldn't have thought there'd be many tries in that. I'm looking at more like a 15-12, maybe.
Really? Correct.
Yeah, all penalties by Farrell. I think there might be a long one from Daly as well.
It's going to be a snooze fest.
I think
then,
old
is it?
Daly, I bet so it will be. It could be quite boring, but, you know.
Right, Ronnie, we'll call the World Cup chat to a point there. Well, I do have a message from Leon, who's over in Japan, who's actually been catching up with one of our old World Cup colleagues, Joe Worsley. So we'll hear from Joe and Leon in just a moment.
So I was walking around the deepest, dark streets of Tokyo, and I bumped into none other than Joe Worsley, Wasps and England legend, 275 caps for Wasps, 78 caps for England, one Lions tour, three World Cups. Well, actually, now we're on the fourth World Cup. But what would be your best World Cup memory?
Yeah, torn between first cap in 99. First cap's always a great moment. I think 2007 was also a great experience. Just the journey, unexpected, really poorly prepared going into it, and the character and the so unexpected from everybody that we would get to the final and push South Africa close. And that whole journey was just an amazing 5 weeks.
If I was to ask you to give us one bit of advice that you've had, a good bit of advice that you can share with the rest of us, what would that be?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Over all the years of gems I've been given, but at a young age, I'm a good sports psychologist, talking to me about making sure your mind's clear going into a game, about how you get there, how you get your mind prepared for the match so you arrive without having to think about anything else. Things outside rugby, things on the pitch. Make sure everything's clear so when you're on the pitch, you're free to act as opposed to think. I found that very, very useful throughout my career.
And I've heard some rumours, obviously I haven't played for Wasps, but I've heard some rumours that Lou used to give some nuggets of advice out. Are there any funny ones that you could think of that you can repeat on here?
He used to shout us before some games, get barred up and steaming. Where I come from, barred up and steaming means drunken with a hard on before the game. So I always found some of that a bit strange.
Is that what led to your success, do you think?
Maybe, or he went to Ampleforth, I'm not sure, one or the other.
As you know, all the podcasts you listen to are free to access, and they're free because of our fantastic supporters like Harry's. If I let you into a little secret, do you want to know how Leon gets those tiny pencil legs of his so silky smooth? Well, if you do, listen in. It's all down to Harry's. Harry's are an online subscription-based shaving brand who have a dedicated team of more than 600 engineers, designers, craftsmen, and chemists making their products from the finest materials and ingredients. And I tell you what, it really shows on those silky smooth legs of Leon's. Their quality blades are almost half the price of the leading five-blade brand, and their trial set is available at the unbelievable price of just £3.95. I mean, that is an absolute bargain. I got sent one of these kits in the post, direct to my door, which makes it even easier. And when you open it, you have absolutely everything you could need for that perfect shave. You get a weighted ergonomic handle, so it feels perfect in your grasp. Five precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip. I mean, who doesn't enjoy a lubricating strip? I'm sure Mrs. Moody may be borrowing it later. And a trimmer blade. Rich lathering shave gel, which leaves your skin a silky smooth. And a travel blade cover to protect your kit, which is really handy for me as I'm on the road a lot. So I can just pop it in my bag and off I go. Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for only £3.95, and by doing so, you'll be supporting our podcast After the Whistle. Get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, five-blade cartridge, foaming shaving gel, and travel blade cover by going to harrys.com/whistle. That's harrys.com/whistle. Right, let's get back to the pod. Right, Ronnie, we've heard from Leon and Joe. We've chatted about the World Cup at the weekend. I want to get a little bit more into you because you've been such a character of the game for so long. We were just chatting then about the stories, the crazy stories that we both have, actually. You know, some are true, some are not, some are myth. But before I do that, just go through some of your stats. So you started out at Bristol.
Yep.
Played for, actually, across two separate stints over 10 years for them, over 117 games. Is that right?
I think it might have been a few more than that, Lewis.
Was it more than that? Well, mate, I'm going from
Wikipedia could be wrong.
Yeah, no, you tell me if I'm wrong, mate, because I could well be. You went on to play for Bath. You were part of that winning Heineken Cup side in 98.
Yeah.
You then moved to Leeds, where you had over 70 appearances for Leeds. You were also a Power Gen Cup winner in 05. Actually playing your old rivals, Bath. That must have been humdinger of a game, yeah. Because didn't you fall out? You fell out with Robbo. Did you?
No, I fell out with Michael Foley at the time.
Okay, the Bath coach at the
time. Yeah, and I played against him against Australia, and we had words about that. England against Australia, old foe. You know, I'd give him a bit of a grilling and a kicking, and all of a sudden he gets employed as a consultant at Bath. And I remember some bloke coming up to me saying, "Watch yourself with him."
Yeah.
You know, there were some stories about him, and I said, "Well, don't worry about it. You know, he's not wed coach or anything." And then he eventually, Callard left. Don't know the full story of why, and then Foley took over, and then it was basically out with the old, in with the new, and he wanted yes men. So the likes of Kat, myself, Magsy, Dan, Lyle, Hagee, all got a boot really, and I remember him saying to me, "You're never going to play for Bath again."
Yeah, she said that to you, didn't she?
Yeah. I said, "What do you mean? You can't do that, Well, I'm head coach now, and you'll be training with the under-19s. And I'm in the England squad at the time.
How old were you then?
I just about, that's 2000, maybe 2002. Yeah. And I'm in the England squad. I'm number one.
Yeah.
Stroke two with Tomo.
Yeah.
And he said, "You're never play for England again." I said, what do you mean you're playing
as your Bath coach? He said,
"I'm at Bath." Yeah, he was head coach then at Bath, yeah. and he said, "Look, Mark, you never like me." I said, "No, you're right. And I can't work with you because you don't like me and I don't like you." And I went, "That's fine then, we'll just get on." And he said, no, you will be getting on. And if you do stay, you'll be training with the under 19s and you'll never play. Well, I can stop that, my selection. Anyway, Jack Rowell got on the phone, and there's a big humding about Bath behind the scenes, and they were saying, "No, we got to have Regan. And they said, no, you either have him or me, and at the end of the day, no one's bigger than the club, and the coach will always get their way, because he wanted to bring his own little hooker in called Humphreys, I think it was. Jonathan Humphreys came in and played Bath, and I got pushed in, and I had a chance of going to back. No, there was nothing at Bristol. They had a full squad, but I had a chance to go and play at Northampton. They asked me to go and play at Northampton. Northampton coaches Saints, asked me to go play at Saints, and I thought, I can't do that. That's me and Thompson then together, and we're ruining each other's chances.
I
can't play 50% of the time, and he play 50% of the time. We're ruining each other's chances. There's no
way. Is that what they suggested?
Yeah, and I like him and that. And I think I've got to go somewhere else. So I said, "Look, I'm going to go to Cardiff." Came forward, Cardiff, Swansea, Biarritz came forward. Great deal, Biarritz. It's brilliant. And I thought, I'll go Biarritz. I rang up Clive Woodward and said, "Clive, going to go and play for Biarritz or Cardiff. Don't mind that, do you?" I'm an all-day at the time. And he goes, "No, you won't. Because you won't play for England if you go and play in Biarritz." I'm going, "Oh, it'd be a great start for the kids in that." He said, "I don't care. You're at the shop window. And we ain't got time to go down there to watch you, Mark. You know, we got a pool of players here. And if you want to go to the World Cup, Mark, I'm telling you now, if you go into another country and play another country, you will not go to the World Cup." And I thought, look, okay, missing out a massive deal at Biarritz.
Yeah.
Brilliant for the kids. Could have learned at least one language. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I thought, gotta go there. Be great for the kids and family. Biarritz, fabulous. Not so much Cardiff or Swansea, but that'd be brilliant. He said, "No, I ain't going there." So I went to lowly Leeds.
So did you? So even Cardiff, he said Cardiff wouldn't have been acceptable.
No, that was in a Pro 12. That was in a different league, and we ain't got time to go over the bridge to watch you or anything like that. You know, we got enough to focus on, as it is, Mark, going up to the World Cup.
How do you feel about that now, then? I know, so I want to get on to how it was for you beating Bath, but actually, how do you feel about that time? Do you wish you'd gone to Biarritz, or were you glad you ended up at Leeds?
Obviously, hindsight's a wonderful thing. Sometimes you make a wrong decision, other times you make good decisions, and I've made quite a lot of good decisions in my time. Some of them, not meaningful, but made some good decisions at the time and thought correctly, and that was a good decision to make, because we couldn't predict that we were going to win the World Cup, but we were certainly number one.
Yeah.
Look at that way, and we're going down there, and we got a great chance of winning, and we're a great bunch of lads, and I want to be part of that. And I said, "Look, all right, I'll go up to Leeds, half the price of Biarritz."
Yeah, so that's a big hit financially. For
yeah,
you
of
the
course
family,
it is. Yeah. But look at the bigger picture: England, you're playing for England. You want to stay involved in that? It takes as long as it would from Bristol to get to Leeds, as it would from Bristol on the plane to get to Biarritz.
Yeah.
So there was no difference in time. I could have been the other side of the world and it wouldn't mean different. I couldn't get back to Bristol or see my parents as easy as it could, just like that.
Yeah.
So we went out to Leeds, just dragged up the whole family and the kids, and it was a big, big haul. The kids cried all the way there. Maria cried all the way there as well, my wife. And then when we came to leave...
Cried all the way there?
Yeah,
really?
Didn't want to leave Bristol. Then when we left Leeds to come back to Bristol, they cried all the way home. Because they loved it in Leeds. It was a fantastic decision to make. The people were wonderful. They're a lovely, lovely set of, northern people, that are Yorkshire people that are really, really kind and generous and really loved it. And we had a good side.
And you say you had that Power Gen Cup final then, so you come back. So what was that like?
Went to the Heineken. I got Leeds into the, well, not high, but the team got into the Heineken Cup, and then we had a good 2 years in the Heineken Cup. This Leeds side was kept up by default, if you can remember, because I think it was Rotherham that was supposed to be coming up from the League Two.
Yeah.
or League One into the Premiership, but they didn't have the criteria.
That's right.
And so Leeds were bottom and they stayed up. And so I thought, no, I've got nothing to lose, Christ almighty. It's an English side and I can't go to Northampton, can I? Quite
yeah.
And like Wasps were keen as well. And I thought, that's London. And, and I know Lawrence and Zanania put a call in to Gatland, and Gatland was really keen. But I thought Wasps, maybe would have been a good move actually. Yeah. Because most of the people that do go to Wasps get a good job after, to be fair.
Yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah,
they're
true,
in,
yeah.
They're in London, you're based in London, and there's people you know, not what you know at the end of the day. Went to Leeds and thoroughly enjoyed myself over Leeds and then got into the final of my final year. I said, look, lads, I'm leaving you in the Heineken Cup. I will be going back to Bristol because that's where I'm from. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. Became a cult hero within about two or three games out there. It's fabulous. And we played for a name on the front of the jersey, not so much a name on the back. And that's the way we were up at Leeds. And that's the way I've always played.
No, mate, well, it's obviously, in hindsight, a good decision.
And
to,
it's great to beat Bath in the final as well. When,
tell me about that, because that was Foley. Was Foley still there?
Yeah,
when you
Foley
played?
Was there. Oh, it's great. I mean, it's great.
So the man that let you go.
Yeah, I remember going down to Leeds. Leeds were playing Bath as well, down at the Wreck, and Leeds would beat Bath. I never lost to Bath once when I went to Leeds. And you could think I was there three seasons, so there's two a season at least, six, eight times, beat Bath home and away. And it's great just to beat Foley, and it's fantastic. Because I spend most of the game, really, to be fair, fighting Grewcock. I mean, and...
Did you get on with Gruy? Because
yeah,
obviously
I loved him. I loved him. He'd be the first person on my team list, tell you that way. If I was going to war, or even to a rugby match, I thought he was a great player, and he was hard. Yeah. And I liked that a lot.
He didn't take any prisoners.
The beauty of him being second row is that he had this knack of then unbinding his binding and then sending a punch up through the scrum. And I could see it coming. I just turned my head like that and said, is that you again, Gruy? Standard stuff. And he'd get up fighting with him again. And if it took a magnificent player like Danny Grewcock off his game to come around and try beating me up all game as well, that's great because I'd never done my job.
Did you think that was a big part of your contribution to the team then, was actually distracting the opposition by getting into them verbally, physically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't all singing or dancing and I'll admit that. But I was just got stuck in and it was one of those guys that went, we need one. And the amount of times I'd had playing at teams and they'd go, right, if we had another 14 Mark Regans on the pitch today, we'd have won that game.
Yeah.
Or opposition coaches moaning about me.
Yeah.
You know, a South African coach, the French coach, calling me a grotesque clown.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm most upset with the grotesque part, to be fair. I mean, but I don't mind that. Doing the job. Did we win? Yeah. Opposition, like, you through your career, you'd meet different coaches and they come from different backgrounds and different clubs. And I just remember in a team meeting, a coach coming and saying, look, we used to spend 20 minutes about you, Mark Regan, in our team meeting, I had to get him off the park, and we're going likely to win the game because you're nothing without him.
You had a knack of getting under people's skin as well, didn't you?
Yeah, just, I mean, all mouth really, but I couldn't hear myself speak because couldn't hear because deaf.
Well, tell me about that briefly then, because that is literally a fact I've only just found out now. You know, we've played together over numerous occasions with England and against each other, and I'm sure there's a lot of your mates didn't know that you are deaf. So you have actually literally just put hearing aids in. You know, how did that impact your playing? Because, I mean, that is an enormous challenge to overcome as a guy that's having to give and receive calls at line-out time.
Yeah, it affected me from a kid, I remember that. My mum taking me to get my hearing done, and they did say to me then that you're pretty badly deaf, but my mum said, you've got to have some hearing aids. I said, no way, I'm not wearing hearing aids to school. I'll get piss taken out of me massively. I kept dealing with it, ma.
Yeah.
So I didn't do it. Then I went to a private school, and that helped a bit. But then,
How did that help when you went to?
Well, because you
what
had
school
more,
was it as well?
I went to a private school up at it's called Clark's Grammar, and you know the classrooms were just a normal size. You weren't chucked at the back of the class, forgotten about. As what can happen at some state schools, I can quite imagine as it did to me.
Yeah.
But my mum and dad said, look, you know, this bloke, you know, he's going to need some help. He's, you know, he's likely deaf. I'm clearly not right there. And we're hoping that this private school will help us through. And it did, to a certain extent. I don't know where I'd be if I didn't have rugby. I went to a private school that didn't play rugby. My rugby was only played on a Sunday morning. And my mum and dad would take me to the other side of Bristol to get me to go where I want to go. I lived in Keynsham at the time and went to Keynsham at under eights. But I couldn't beat this local side called St. Brendan's, the other side of Bristol, like in Filton they were, 15 miles away. I said, Dad, I can't beat them, I've got to join them. I mean, I'm losing every game and I don't like losing. I play this game to win. 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, and they took me to the other side of Bristol, and that's the way it started, and then got picked up by Bristol under the 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, and then eventually into Bristol Colts, and then into Bristol United second team, and then Bristol first team. So it was hard at school, massively hard.
And, so how was that?
I went to see an audiologist, must have been about half a year now, and he said, "Mark, you're profoundly deaf. You are deaf. We've done so many hearing tests on you now. You're deaf." I said, "Yeah, I know that." And I said, "Does that explain why I'm a bit loud then?" He said, "Yeah, I think it is because you're loud in this room."
So what happened? What happened on the playing field then? So how did you overcome not being able to
lip read?
Did you really?
Yeah, lip read, literally lip read, and go, "Did he say that?" Because I struggle with. I got good with low tone.
Yeah,
a bloke's voice, like I could hear you, right? But not with a woman's voice. A t f s k. That I will mishear what someone would say.
Right,
okay. And I'd take that, and I think that was, what did he say? Did he just piss at me there, or did, yeah. What did he say? And I'd find it quite embarrassing and go, what? Or pardon? When you ask pardon or excuse me once or twice, you think, well, I've missed it the first time. Can't miss it a third time.
Yeah.
Or second time, can he? And I'd just go, yeah, all right, yeah, walk away and not feel quite sort of maybe uncomfortable in that position. But I can imagine a lot of people do if they are profoundly deaf like I am. And I went to see the audiologist. He said, "Mark, did you have measles or something like that as a kid?" And I said, "I don't know." I rang mum up and mum said, "Yeah, yeah, really bad, really bad. Your brother wasn't too bad, but you were hugely bad." And that's what affected me. I want immunised.
Do you wish you'd maybe told some of the coaches or the players now? Do you think it impacted your play?
Would have been relentless.
is that the reason
I was
you didn't?
Good for giving it out, but not too much taking it, to be fair. But
do you think it would have taken the pressure off
just,
you?
I just came across then as a bit of a clown and had a laugh and having a joke, because that's what I was comfortable with. I couldn't hear what he was trying to say, so we'd have a laugh and a joke about it, and maybe that's why I'm a little bit, I'm a cheerful chap and have a laugh, and people take a mick out of me all day long, but they didn't really know why.
Yeah.
I mean, just think that he's just one thick twat.
Yeah.
Which is in the case, really. You know, I'm quite intelligent, if you believe it or not.
Yeah.
But I just can't hear. And that drags you down in your life, and, you know, you move on and you overcome it. And it's hard, but I've achieved it.
Yeah.
And I got to the highest level of being pretty well dumb. Not dumb, but very thick. Can't hear.
Yeah, can't hear. Yeah.
Correctly.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at you now and I'm looking at your mouth.
Yeah.
While you're talking, Lewis.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't mind people talking about me at dinners, etc., because it keeps me in the public eye, and I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And they ask me if I can go to come and do the next dinner, etc., because I'm quite, you know, I did win Rugby Speaker of the Year last year, and I enjoyed that. Thank you very much, Lewis. It's a nerve-wracking experience, mind you, in front of 1,000 people.
Was it?
But then vote for you on a little handheld device, you know, a little bit of a ask the audience who wants to be a millionaire, A, B, C, or D. Who's going to win?
Who are you against? Do you remember?
Brian Moore.
Okay.
And the other one was Jones, front rower for Wales.
Adam Jones.
Okay. And
so it's an all front row speaking
affair.
Yeah,
the front row speaking affair. Yeah.
Oh, mate. Well, I want to just go into your hearing stuff a little bit more, because so I had, I don't know whether you know, so I had ulcerative colitis. So I was diagnosed in 2005, which is bowel disease.
Right.
So in 2005, I was diagnosed. I hid it for probably a year or two initially, because for the same reason. Maybe slightly different is that I had a lot of injuries when I played.
Yeah.
And I didn't want the coaches to see it as another reason not to pick me.
Yeah, also, you were nuts.
I'd take that as a compliment. Also, it was one of those, like maybe like you, I maybe didn't know how people would respond to it. But what I did was, I did tell people, so I told my coach, Wells, remember John Wells? Actually, he had a bowel disease as well. So when I told him, he was like, "Mate, I totally get it." I told him because I had to miss going into meetings sometimes, be late for stuff. I'd have to pack spare clothes in the car because sometimes I'd essentially shit myself on the way to training.
Yeah.
And he totally understood. And as soon as I told someone, actually, I felt like it took all the pressure off my shoulders.
Yeah.
I wonder whether, you know, with your deafness, whether it would have been, you know, something you wish you'd done earlier.
Yeah, I look back at anger really and think to myself, yeah, why didn't you? Because that would have stopped a lot of...
Yeah.
People would have understood more then.
Yeah.
Of what sort of character he's actually like.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I do look back like that, but it was one of those where I didn't feel comfortable with it.
Okay.
And And it's only been I've retired now over 10 years now.
Yeah.
And it's still only just about now. And it's a different world.
Yeah.
To me now, I can hear the cat flap going. Now I can hear things happen. I can watch TV now and not have it on 100. I can hear my wife now speaking next door in the other room when she's talking to me, when I usually got to be standing in front of her or people and go, I see your lips, Ed, and talk to her that way.
Yeah.
The world changed for me because I can hear rustling. I can hear, like I said, the cat flap. I can hear really
clearly.
Really clearly.
Yeah.
And I'm just about to get some new ones fitted now by a friend of mine who's very kindly said, why don't you try these, Mark?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm delighted you've been able to talk about it because it clearly been something you've struggled with during your entire life.
Huge. I can't hear people talk sometimes. We're getting an environment where basically people are talking in a big room and someone's basically talking up on the stage. I won't hear that. I'll miss that completely. But now I got the AIDS in, I can hear that, and I can engage in that conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I have a conversation with someone, I can't hang around too long. So one, I can't hear what he's talking about.
And it's interesting then now. So understanding that now is actually why I get a sense that, and you mentioned it earlier about you've always played along with that role of being, you know, maybe a little bit thick. You know, maybe I've done the same as well as a younger man. You know, there's always stories plenty of stories about us both out there.
There's always those stories, Lewis. And like you say, never let the truth get in front of a good story, you know?
Yeah.
And if people are talking about you and I and dinners at meetings, I know you speak about me as well, Lewis. Yeah, and I take that all the endearment. You know, I love that. That keeps me in the public eye and it keeps us going. Yeah. It keeps us involved in the game, which I absolutely love after dinner speaking.
Yeah.
You know? And so you understand where we're coming from now because you had your difficulties and I had my difficulties, and you can see why now people were like that, maybe. Not they were never nasty to me or anything, but I was in that uncomfortable position of being where you couldn't hear what he just said. Yeah.
Was there ever a really low moment during your playing days where, you know, maybe was there ever a really low moment that transpired off the back of the hearing?
Not what I can actually put my finger to. Maybe a low moment or regrets of like not being politically correct with the coaching staff, you know, because I was always myself. I couldn't see myself as a, you know, might be the wrong word, ass licker or pilot fish, we would say, a little fish pilot that flies, that swims around next to the big sharks.
That was Dorian.
That was Dorian West. I called him pilot fish. Now, it just destroyed me because I just watch him do it. I think, why can't I do that?
Yeah.
Why can't I go up and have a conversation with the coaching staff? One, I can't have a conversation, I suppose, so I won't hear them. And I'd be saying the wrong thing, maybe. And two, I didn't feel comfortable in that environment. I wasn't comfortable with ticking the box. And so I do have a regret that I wish I could have been more politically correct with the coaching staff and gone up to them and gone, so what do I need to be number one, or what do I need to stay number one, Clive, Andy Robinson, Jack Rowell, Brian Aston, those sort of coaches to stay number one? And they'd give me a load of, you know, lip service, as you know they would, because they got to do it to 22 other blokes.
Yeah.
End of the day.
So do you
think to yourself, well, I'll go for one and out the other, that is. And I've done it, I've ticked the box.
Yeah.
My sheet is there, it's got the red little mark in the box. It's a bit like when we used to do those eye tests, Bab.
Yeah.
Do those eye tests, didn't we? And it's ticked the box on it.
With Cheryl Cole,
during the World Cup. But it was Clive Woodward's dream, wasn't it? It was like, we've got to do peripheral vision. It's like, you know, corner, touch flag, goalpost to see it all at once, you know? Yeah. You know, these sort of things that, which these little small things all add up to major things. And that's a great, another word of Clive Woodward's, thinking correctly under pressure and things like that, teacup. Yeah. He loved that, didn't he?
He did,
And to be fair, he was very good at that.
Yeah.
Very good at that. And that's what, those sort of things were magnificent and he was good. And
do you think then, so you were just saying about, you were saying you wish you'd ask more questions. Do you think then sometimes you played the clown to because actually
had the crap with
easier,
the last.
It was easier than, you know what I mean, going and asking the difficult question.
Yeah, playing the clown as well on the bus, at, you know, training, etc. It's just my way of having a bit of fun, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't massively serious until I stepped over that white line. You know what I mean? And you went and played some rugby, but off the pitch, you've got to have some fun. And I suppose some coaches didn't like that. They didn't like people having fun because they couldn't relate to it themselves because they were boring, no doubt. And they'd see that as like, oh, he's a bloody clown again. He started again. Look. Having a laugh, but then at the end of the day, at training session, if I didn't have a laugh, I'd end up crying.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was just like, wanting to have a great time. And whenever times were hard at training and it's freezing cold, you just don't want to be there, do you? You think to yourself, Think about it this way, Mark. You could be down at the cheese factory making cheese. You could be under a motor vehicle now, covered in oil and mud. You could be a chimney sweep. Christ, think about it this way. You're in a park now. Think of it as a park. Gone down a park with your mates and kicking or throwing a ball around. Yeah. That's the mindset I'd end up having.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, we do this. We're just lucky.
Yeah.
That's lucky. What am I moaning about? Not want to be here when it's pissing with rain. Don't be stupid, Mark. Get out there. You're there with your mates and thrive on it. Enjoy yourself. Have the crack. So coaches didn't like that a lot. See, and I do have a lot of. I do hope that I was a little bit more politically correct, but I didn't really get on with most of them.
Some of them I did. You had your challenges with coaches, but in terms of England, you played for England from 1995. So you took over from Brian Moore. You played to 2008. You mentioned already that you were the first player to make their professional debut for England in the starting 15 at Twickenham. Lawrence then came off the bench.
That was a Trivial Pursuit question.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
How many caps did you have?
I had 46 in the end. I'm a bit disappointed. Now, I do look at it this way. If I was more politically correct, Lewis, I'd end up 78.
Do you think that would have been
the difference? I did sit on the bench 34 times as well and only got on 3 or 4 times.
If this is your first time listening to After the Whistle, quite frankly, where have you been? But fortunately for you, you've come at exactly the right time because we've got a very special offer for you at the moment. Thanks to our lovely friends at beer52.com. You can get your hands on 8 free and exclusive craft beers from around the world. What could be better than that? All you've got to do is go to beer52.com/moody and cover the £4.95 postage. And because we're extra nice at After the Whistle, you'll get 2 extra beers for listening to our podcast. That's 10 delicious free beers. Sample them in the sun, sample them during the World Cup final, where hopefully you're going to see England lift the trophy. Not too many because it's going to be an early start, but a nice warm-up for you. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club, who bring you the best beers from the UK and beyond straight to your doorstep. There's no lock-in to the service. Sadly, there's no lock-in either, but there's no lock-in to the service, and you can leave at any time. Your first box will be sent to you next day and will contain beer from all over Europe, hoppy IPAs, hazy pale ales, refreshing lagers from breweries like Aura in Italy, Ninkasi from France, Tempest in Scotland, Boss Brewing, our favourite beer in Wales, and loads more. But you can mix up your light and dark beers if you fancy changing things up a bit. So see what's on offer, and if you want, try them all. Just go to www.beer52.com/moody. That's www.beer52.com/moody to get your first case of 8 beers for free. And don't forget, After the Whistle listeners get an extra 2 beers free, you lucky buggers. That's www.beer52.com/moody. Right, let's dive back into the chat with Ronnie. You mentioned coaches, you didn't necessarily get on with them. You had a relatively famous falling out with Andrew Robinson when you announced yourself. So after going to the World Cup in 2003, you came back, played in 2004, fell out with Robbo, and then announced your retirement from international rugby. What was that about? What happened there? You know, and why did you fall out? Why did you fall out with so many coaches, but in particular Robbo at that time?
Maybe just because I was a clown, playing a clown, I suppose, and having a laugh. And maybe they didn't see me taking it very seriously, but Christ, I did take it seriously. I knew that I'd be fit to play this game. I knew that if I was slacking on my fitness, I'd go and do extra where someone won't watch him. I didn't have to do extra training in front of coaches. So they'd go, oh, look what he's doing. Isn't that fantastic? Tick the box. I'll do it my own way. You know? Now, 2004, I've just got the love of Clive Woodward, just got all the love back, and I was playing really well. 2004, went to New Zealand and Australia and won the shirt back fair and square off of Steve Thompson. Brilliant. I've got the shirt now. Pre-season started, I'm playing at Leeds as well. They were playing really well at Leeds. We play Northampton, Leeds against Northampton, and I played well, really well, and Andy Robinson was in the crowd watching, and Steve was playing for Northampton, and we won. Leeds won quite convincingly. And that night I thought, Christ, I'm going to do myself here, because we're meeting up on Sunday night at Twickenham because we're playing Canada on the Saturday, next following Saturday. But I'll tell you what, I'm there, I've done it, I've got the shirt, you know, I've earned it back on merit here.
Yeah.
And I thought, no problem, got it down. Anyway, got down to Twickenham and we had a team meeting and then we got just about to go out and run out onto the pitch at Twickenham and Robert pulls me to one side and says, Mark, right? I said, yeah. And I have a word. I thought he was going to ask me if I'm going to be captain. That's how I thought he was going to ask there for a minute. I'm playing that well. I thought, right, yeah, go on then, I'm ready for this then, Robert. He said, you're not playing you this weekend. I said, what do you mean not playing me this weekend? I, you know, played against Australia and New Zealand, won the shirt back fair and square. He watched me against Tomo on Friday night, and played really well. He said, yeah, yeah, but playing Thompson Dave this weekend, they're getting fit to play against South Africa the following weekend. So I'm thinking, what, they're getting fit against Canada? Disrespectful. And then playing against South Africa the following week, I'm thinking, you're taking a piss, Robbo. Like, I'm thinking that. And then I said, oh, never mind, I'll be on the bench. He said, oh, I've got worse news, you're not even on the bench. Andy Titchell's on the bench. And I thought, well, words cannot express the way I felt. And what I said to him was, in some nice way, why don't you go away and get me back on the plane back to Leeds ASAP, I'm chucking it in. I can't have that. No way. But I looked back at it and thought, character of the man would have been, yeah, maybe I'd just take that on the chin and come back and fight because I know they're going on a British Lions tour at the end of the year and I want to go on that one. Having missed out on the one before and I thought, oh God, got it. No, but my mouth got in the way of it and that is it.
Do you regret that?
Oh, I do regret it. I do regret it, hugely, because there was opportunities then I could have come back and played for the Indian team quite easy because Robbo had an absolute stinker involved with the time.
You mean coaching with England? Yeah. He had a tough time.
He ended up getting the sack after Argentina and Clive Woodward rang me up, bless him, he rang me up and said, Mark, I understand you're not playing English rugby anymore. I said, yeah, I just couldn't get on with it. I didn't, you know. I know Andy Robinson, since coaching me at Bath many years ago and he knew why I was ticked, etc. And I just, you know, I just took it on the chin and I should have cut my mouth shut. He said, look, it's going to make it really hard for me, Mark, to select you for the Lions trip. You know that, don't you? I said, look.
Clive said that to you.
Yeah, he said that to me. I said, look, Clive, that I really respect that. Look, but at the end of the day, you know, you've got to do what you got to do. And I went on and I put all my energy into playing for Leeds and Leeds had a wonderfully outstanding season, capped off with beating Bath at Twickenham before I left.
In the Power Gen Cup, that was, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that was 2005. So, and then they went on Lions tour and I was disappointed I missed that, but I should have kept my mouth shut. That was a big mistake. And then as soon as Andy Robinson got the sack, it was Brian Aston rang me and said, Mark, do you want to play for England again? I straight away turned around and said, look, there's a one-legged swan swimming circles. And he went, I'll take it. I said, yeah then, Mark. I said, well, I'll be there tomorrow.
So that was in the build-up to 2007 World Cup. So you've had a hiatus from playing from 2004.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the reasons you've just said, all of a sudden you're now back in. What was that like? You know, suddenly, you know, from being in the wilderness, missing that Lions tour, you went on the Lions tour in 97, that famous South Africa tour, you know, with the, what was the video called? Living with the Lions, you know, that everyone raved about. You then missed 01, you missed 05, but all of a sudden you're back in the setup. That must have been true elation for you.
Huge high. And it was one of those, you grasped the opportunity, both hands that was like, this is not, I'm not going to let this go. I'm going to do everything in my power. That meant changing slightly, not so much the personality, but your politically correctness towards the coaches.
Did you try and round the, you're trying to sort of curb your enthusiasm to speak your mind?
Well, I did actually, Lewis. And I got on with the coaches. And I'm like, I'm in a very happy place here. I'm not going to let this go. And then went on a great journey for 16, 15 games for England. And loved every minute of it and then played the World Cup final age 36 years of age. What's all that about?
But here, look, let's just chat about 07. So, because that was South Africa. Obviously, England are playing South Africa at the weekend. We've mentioned that already. What sort of highlight was that for you? Because you were in the squad in 03. You didn't make it into the playing day squad, which must have been, you know, very frustrating. How much redemption was there for you in 07 as a 36-year-old playing against South Africa?
Wow, it was dream come true. It was wonderful. I look back and I see there was just the likes of me. Simon Shaw was one of the 31.
Of course, yeah.
Gomersall was another one that was one
well,
of
Shaw's, he wasn't even in the squad in 03, was he? He was actually flown out as a late replacement.
He didn't play
Brewery.
A single match, to be fair, and he don't see himself as a Rugby World Cup winner. And I think you're putting yourself under, you know,
is that right?
Being out of order towards yourself there, Chorsey. You know, you're a wonderful player. You're not out here for the default. I just think you should have been here in the first place. And he don't see it that way, and he's a bit disappointed. But then he had the redemption as well, didn't he? He had the same position in 2007. He's going to take it all the way. And he then went on 2011 and went on a large tour as well in 2009. So he went on a little bit further. And he was behind the likes of some outstanding players. Jono, Jono's captain. Never going to get in above those guys while they're playing. Soulsy was an outstanding player. And I thoroughly enjoyed my time. And it was my time, you know.
But so let's move on a little bit then. So you had redemption in 07 after the frustration from 04. You didn't get that Lions tour in 05. You had a wonderful career that you enjoyed with your home club, Bristol and Bath. In retirement now, you've spoken about the after dinner circuit. How have you found retirement and the challenges that that's posed? You know, it's been 10 years.
There's huge challenges when it comes to rugby. One minute you've got a high. You're chasing a high. You get ready for the big event on a Saturday. You're wanted. You're contracted to a club. You're a rugby player enjoying life. Then all of a sudden that gets taken away from you. I can see people and understand why people they talk a lot about mental illness.
Have you struggled with any of that?
I don't think so. But I think I might have.
Yeah.
Because I constantly look for a buzz now.
Yeah.
You're always looking for the next goal, next buzz. And where is it if it doesn't come? What do? You eat a drink? Do you go out and drink a lot? Or you go out with your mates? Do you get involved in some incorrect crowds? These things where you can get your buzz from.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, where is it? It disappears when you're an asset to a club or to a union, where I think the RFU should be doing a lot more for the likes of ex-professional rugby players when you've played all your life to try and win in the World Cup. And when they do win a World Cup or win something special and you are performing for your country, I think there should be a lot more from the RFU or any union to look after and support the players after rugby. Not the ones that are injured, so much the people that get injured. We know that, the RPA, they've done a great job. But then you look at the things that the RFU, you know, because you are owned by the RFU in a sense.
The clubs have a responsibility as well.
The clubs and the RFU do, and yet you get cast away like an old sock, and that's it. Thanks for coming. You don't even get a season or season ticket given to you. After, you know, it's just hard. And people can. I understand why people talk about it, mental illness after something like when something's taken away from you, or what do I do next? Like, one minute you're a professional rugby player being paid $200,000 a year, and next minute you're going, right, what do I look around to get? Where's my next job coming from? But I was very fortunate because I was a colourful character myself. I made a lot of friends in high places on the way up. I looked after them on the way up myself. When I'm on the way up, they looked after me on the way down. So I ended up working for about a number of different companies as their ambassador, and they pay me handsomely each month. And it put my kid through school, and all they wanted in return was me to rock up and, you know, have a talk to their clients, a dinner out at Langham's in London, etc., or around the golf, etc., and they pay me handsomely. But then as the years go by, they're then looking for the next Mark Regan, aren't they?
They
fall off the cliff, don't they? You stay friends with them. I've never looked back at any of the companies I worked for and said, oh, he told me that's the last check, last time he's paying me, etc. He didn't have to do that in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, so I was very, very fortunate. I was a colourful bloke and I could come along and I could talk to people.
Yeah.
I could talk to people as long as I was close. And not in a very
and you can see their lips, yeah.
Yeah, I can see their lips and I can gauge and do my job. And then they've fallen by the wayside. And then I always had to go and speak at dinners, like when someone would say, come and speak at our club. I go, yeah, I'd love to do that. Why not?
And with the speaking, obviously, and the companies that you've worked for, I imagine there's a lot of entertaining. So there's probably a lot of drinking. And you spoke about, you know, the drinking culture when you're an amateur. Has the drink become a way of getting through some of those tough times since you've finished?
Definitely. Because you're looking for the next buzz.
Yeah.
It was win or lose at the booze when you played. It was like all week you'd be training really hard and then you'd treat yourself to something special at the end of the week, whether it be won or lost. You'd go out to your mates, we'd go to a club, and then Sunday it'd be rehab again and all. It'd be a big cycle like this all the time. At least there's 1 week in there to get absolutely smashed because you trained all week to do it. That was my thought process because I came from an amateur background and it never left me. Yeah. As in nowadays, the kids coming through nowadays, they're like cardboard cutouts and they are driven professionals. As in, I always had that amateur slightly embedded in the back of my brain somewhere that I do enjoy a drink.
Yeah. How does Mare and everyone cope with you?
Obviously Maria.
Doing lots of, Maria, sorry. Yeah. Cope with you doing the off-dinner circuit. And because there's quite a lot of late nights, isn't it? You know, when you're dinner, but you're either staying away or you're coming back late. Has it affected the family at all? Or?
Well, lots of things have affected the family. You think to yourself, when you're a professional rugby player, you're not married, are you?
Yeah. Married to the game.
You're married to the game. You're away on tours, 8-week tours sometimes, and the kids are just at home. She's just looking after the kids. You don't see the children grow up, really, because you're constantly 9 to 5 training. You come home, you're knackered, you might take them down the park. Yes, they're there, but you're not attacked. It's been a dad all day because you're on tour, you're away, you're tired, you could be grumpy. And so that was just all marriage life. And then when I finished playing rugby, I'm more around then. And that's how marriage life started. Do you know what I mean? You think yourself, this is what marriage life is supposed to be like. In.
You're sort of finally around.
Well, yeah, you're looking for things to do. And that's, I went off and then coached Clifton Rugby Club. I really enjoyed that. And now I do, I don't do that anymore because I do 3 days a week at work at my family business.
I do? What's that?
Yeah, on a three days a week. That's the mechanical business. Don't get me out dirty.
Yeah.
But I'm very fortunate. I've got an HGV licence. You know, I can drive any lorry anywhere and it's a lorry-based company.
Yeah.
And I do that 3 days a week and I still enjoy my Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Mondays off. And not doing any coaching. I don't do any coaching anymore because I'd be on there because I go work on Tuesday and a Thursday and then I have to go from work straight to training and I wouldn't be home.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just getting back into that cycle again. And then it's just sort of like, just spend a bit more time at home and then this is what marriage is supposed to be about.
Is there anything, so mate, we've been chatting.
I can't stop myself from going on those after dinner speeches when someone rings me up and says, Mark, any chance coming up? Say, let me have a look at my diary. And it's like, empty. I've got to go. Yeah. Love to. As long as you put, I want accommodation on the evening and I come up and entertain the troops.
Fair enough, mate. Well, look, we've been speaking for a while now and you've been incredibly honest and it's been really refreshing and lovely when you chat to someone that you've played with and against and you learn new things and new facts about them that you've never learnt or you've never known before. But before I let you go, I want to ask you two questions. So one is your favourite memory from your playing days.
Captain in the Barbarians.
Oh, yes,
to the
because
win over South Africa in 2007 when I wasn't allowed to play.
Yes, Bristol said you couldn't play, didn't they?
I said I could not play, weren't allowed.
Why?
Because I think it's a PRL said that no one from the Premiership can play because they're not getting any money. And then I had the chairman of the Mickey Stillpaws who rings me up and says, Mark, would you like to play for the Barbarians? I said, bloody right. 2007, I said, who's it against? He said, South Africa. And I thought, well, I'll tell you what, this is the fifth time I've played South Africa this year. Lost 2 on tour, lost 2 on the World Cup 2007. And he said, there's a team, Mark. I looked at the team, the McCalls, etc. And Jerry Collins, the great Jerry Collins, like standing players. That's I'm thinking team, yeah. Martin Onu in the centre and Drew and Coco, etc. And Marshall and Gitto playing. I'm thinking, I am captain in that side, whether you like it or not. So I went and seen a chairman at the Bristol and he said, mate, go on and do what I got to do, mate. You've earned it. But we ain't going to say anything to anyone. And I went off and I went AWOL for a week and then I think all the press were after me I got back and we won that game and it's absolutely fabulous. Because I remember going out and taking the lads, because I'm from England, obviously, and the guys aren't from England, and I took them out for a nightclub in London, and to be fair, we had a great time out, and two of the guys got told to leave, some other circumstance. And I got them out the door, and who shall I see outside loitering with intent was after the South African side, wanted to come in with a coffee, like Francois Steyn, and Banner were all out there. And I said, come on, lads, why don't you come on in for a drink? So they got them down there and we mingled as well on the Tuesday night. And just as I left, Banner, pretty well pissed up by then, said, can I come back in tomorrow night? I said, yeah, bring the whole team. So they brought the whole team and I went out to meet them because my team was banned then from the behaviour of the two other players.
Oh, really? Right.
And they've got home safe, the two other players, and we're banned until Saturday. And I went in and seen the South African squad and went out to John Smith, the hooker, and said, John, right, looking forward to playing you on the weekend. He said, yeah, Ronnie, yeah. I said, you enjoying yourself? Yeah, got all the free drinks, etc. And he said, yeah, yeah. He said, he said, you know, come Saturday morning, we're going to be beating you up and all that. I said, yeah, no worries. You know, it's going to be all handling, no punching and all that lot. And you're going to win the game. You're world champions. Obviously, they're world champions. They're still dining on it. It's been, and obviously, I've got the likes of the South Africans, the Australians, you know what I mean? And they, not South Africans, the New Zealanders and Australians in my side. And they're world-class players. And we got everything to owe these boys, right? So I'm revving up my team like mad. And that's a kickoff, because as soon as, Jay Collins caught the ball and ran over John Smith, and I'm laughing at John Smith. I went over the top of the ruck as well, give him a boot as well, laughing as went over the top. I knew we'd win there and then. I knew we'd win the game there and then. And we end up winning the game 25-6. And I mean, it goes to show that if you go into a game slightly undercooked, not prepared correctly, 90% or 10% off, for instance, you ain't going to change that in a second. Our mindset for the Barbarians, we were never supposed to play that game. The Barbarians had nearly been forgotten in the professional era, but we put, and I would like to think I put the Barbarians back on the map for that game, and we won quite handsomely. And ever since then, we've gone on and played every major nation. And believe it or not, I am the highest capped captain for the Barbarians. I've played about 8 times and captained them 6 times.
Did you really?
Believe it or not. It's just some of those things. You go out on a limb, and I went back to Bristol, and it was coming in my office, Mr. Regan, Mark Regan. I'd sit down opposite the director of rugby. He said, right, no way you were. I said, yeah, yeah. He said, how many sugars do you want in your cup of tea, Mark? I said, oh, this is going to be a bit easy then, isn't it? Dead handy. So I said, I have 2 sugars, please, and Mr. White. And he said, look, right, now get lost and get out there and train with the team. I mean, that you're paid to do. Now, look at it this way, Lewis. I'd never, ever played for the Barbarians if Bristol had a game that weekend.
Yeah.
If they had a league match or something like that, or meaningful match, I'd never played for the Barbarians or given it up to play with your teammates at Bristol. Yeah. There's no way you can cross that bridge and go the other side. You lose trust and faith of your own teammates, and that's one thing you can do.
Fair enough, mate. And look, the last question for you: what's the one piece of advice, or what advice would you give a younger version of yourself coming into the game now?
Listen, be truthful and honest to yourself and work hard. I'd listen to your coaches, your parents and your teachers. Main thing is to get your academical school stuff done right first.
Nice. Ronnie, Mark, it's been awesome. You've been brilliantly honest, and you said it yourself, you're a colourful character, and you're fascinating to listen to, and it really is inspiring to listen to the story of what you've dealt with your hearing as well, because I think this will be the first time many of your former teammates, coaches will have ever learnt about that. Thanks for coming in, mate.
Thank you.
Have a safe journey home. And as always, if you've enjoyed today, then please go on to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe to After the Whistle. My social media handle is LewisMoody7. If you want to throw us any questions, add a hashtag After the Whistle in there so we know it's for the podcast. Ronnie, have you got a social media handle?
No, but I am on when you say social media, there's no Snapchat, there's no Facebook. Right. I do Twitter. A little bit of Twitter. I follow you, Lewis.
Do you? What's your Twitter?
It's just at Mark Regan, blue tick.
Mark Regan, blue tick. Get that in there. And that's it. But we've covered a lot of points in there. And obviously, Leon's not with us today, but he does. He's CEO of Switch the Play, which is a company that does incredible work and support of athletes and aspiring athletes transitioning from one life to another, and go and have a look on switchtheplay.com. Mark spoke about some of the challenges he faced, what he wishes the RFU and clubs are doing now, so have a look at switchtheplay.com if those messages and words resonate with you. And you can look at the Lewis Moody Foundation if you're feeling particularly charitable at the minute and you want to engage with some of the challenges that we've got coming up. Anyway, until the next time, After the Whistle is produced in conjunction with Audio Boom. Cheers, guys.